Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for your invitation. My name is Randy Cook. I am the president of the National Organization for Raw Materials. Oh, let me get up. Can you see my forehead? the National Organization for Raw Materials is www.normeconomics.org is what it is. N-O-R-M, National Organization Raw Materials. normeconomics.org is on the web. I try to keep that website updated pretty much every month, although with the government shutdown, the reports out of the USDA and Bureau of Labor Statistics are not nearly as forthcoming as they have been. So I haven't been updating it quite as rapidly as I have been. But our organization, NORM, started in 1970 by a man named Arnold Paulson from Granite Falls, Minnesota. Prior to that, the same organization, the same research, the same interest in publications were put together beginning in 1936 with the Raw Materials National Council. So we've been at this a while. We've been studying this for over 83 years. And what we've come to is how wealth production works in this country, how we think real capitalism should operate, not the fake stuff we've got going on today. What we have today is, in my view, called international finance capitalism. That's what it is. And the Federal Reserve Bank subscribes to it, the European Central Reserve Bank subscribes to it, the IMF is the purveyor of it, the Bank for International Settlements helps enforce it and set the rules, on and on and on, and around the world it goes. And what it is, globalism is the computerization of the banking industry. That's all it is. That's what, when they say globalization is coming and nobody can say no, all that is the interconnection of the computers. That's what it's about. The question then becomes, who owns the debts? The question we ask is, examine the nature of wealth. What is wealth? Wealth follows the laws of physics. Wealth rots. Wealth rusts. Wealth decays. Because it's real stuff. Money, credit, debt only follows the laws of mathematics, not physics. They persist forever. The ownership claims go on and on and on. And somebody will always say, oh, you owe me, pay up. And I'll say, go ahead, eat your money. I produce wealth, not money. What we need to do, and this is what NORM has identified, is monetize the raw material production, the new wealth production coming off the farms, the mines, the fisheries, the forests. We could calculate a par price or a parity price for most everything. We don't need to do that because with about 5 agricultural crops, we cover the basic income of the United States. If we put parity pricing on those 5 basic commodities, we can balance or ensure that the earnings of the economy as a whole will be within range of keeping us solvent as a nation. And so we can calculate with pretty good accuracy what that parity price should be for corn, barley, wheat, soybeans, if you'd like, cotton. Those are enough. There's 5 of them right there. It's the bulk of our production in this country. It is the bulk of agriculture. And agriculture is the bulk of new annual raw material production. The curiosity about all of this that I've just said is that we actually did this by adoption of policy from 1942 through 1952, an 11-year period in this country. The United States of America did this from 1942 to 1952. And it worked. It worked. We know how to do it. Since then, it's been put to death. Been put to death intentionally, because as you can see, many of the people who like that they are owed rather than paid, many of the people who would rather be...
Oh, what happened?
I don't know. Something went away.
Hold on. Connected. Where was Randy? What was Randy's last thought?
It was that we have done this.
His last thought
years.
Was about parity pricing on five basic commodities.
Right.
And we had done it before.
Right? Yeah, I was talking about in the 30s.
Yep.
When we did this.
Actually, it was the 40s. It was 1942 through 1952.
1940.
Yeah, an 11-year period. In fact, over that 11-year period, parity agricultural policy earned for the Treasury about $12 million total over 11 years, slightly more than $1 million a year, on an annual national income of over $212 billion. So that's not very much. $1 million a year out of $212 billion is pittance, is nothing. Which means that parity policy worked almost completely accurately. Absolutely on the mark. Boom. But it didn't cost anything. It worked. It kept us solvent as a nation. The debt was not expanding. Debts were being paid off. People were able to finance their own operations. Unemployment was shrinking. Businesses were being started. Business startups were increasing.
You know,
all sorts of characteristics of prosperous economic times were evident during that period, 1942 to 1952, other than the war. Now, what we try to restrict the reference to 1947 to 49 to avoid the reference to the wartime economy of 42 through 45, but the mandate was from the Stegall Amendment of 1942, an amendment to the War Powers Emergency War Powers Stabilization Act of 1942, was that the policy of parity pricing would continue for 2 years following the stated cessation of hostilities, which happened on December. Harry Truman said that the hostilities of World War II ended on December 31st. 1945. And so for 46 and 47, the policy persisted. And at that point, 47 was looming, 48 was an election year. Nobody wanted to change ag policy at that point. Harry Truman, anybody remember Harry Truman and the Chicago Tribune headline? Dewey defeats Truman. That was the 1948 election.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Which wasn't true, of course. Dewey did not defeat Truman.
Well, how come the headline was there?
Because the Chicago Tribune was hoping, wishing.
Wishful thinking.
That's right. And one of the things that Harry Truman did was that he rode the Ferdinand Magellan was his train that he drove all around the country and would stop and give talks from the back rail of the car. And he'd have these people who Chuck Walters witnessed this himself in Omaha, Nebraska, in 1948. And as the train would pull into the station, he said, people would descend from the car and come out and pass amongst the crowd, passing out sheets of paper. And he said, on one side of the piece of paper was, here's what you're going to get with Harry Truman. And that was 100% parity. And on the other side, here's what you're going to get with Dewey, which is about 50% of parity.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Dewey defeats Truman didn't happen. And that was part of the reason was that the parity promise to the farmers was upheld by Harry Truman. Anyway, that was, you know, once Eisenhower came in 1952, they chiseled away the parity ag policy bit by bit, little by little. And since that time, today we are at the lowest parity ratio point in the history of our nation.
And the highest debt.
And the highest debt. And growing is faster than any other aspect of our financial...
Income inequality.
Yes. Financial income equality is exploded to the severest extent that we've seen. Well, in 1968, what's his name? The guy that wrote all the history of the world. No, I'm talking about the fellow whose wife was ran away with Joseph Campbell. Oh shoot. The number of names on there. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
The history
of Western civilization. And it doesn't matter.
Durant's?
Yes.
Durant?
Will Durant, thank you very much. Will Durant. Will Durant said that the income inequality he said this in 1968. He said the income inequality is at its greatest extent since imperial plutocratic Rome.
Yeah, it's true.
And that was in 68.
Wow.
Since then. And it's worse by 100% or more since then.
Wow.
More.
Absolutely. So this is what, you know, this is what parity resolves. Parity resolves the difference between debt and wealth. Parity says that when we produce wealth, we monetize it. In other words, wealth puts the value in our dollar. We don't use dollars to determine the value of our wealth. Mm-hmm. We produce wealth and put the value in our dollars. That's what we do as Americans when we observe parity agricultural policy, parity raw materials policy. But that's too sophisticated for the Federal Reserve bankers of today, apparently. They like the fact that somebody owes somebody. Somebody owns a debt. Somebody owns something that minus two hogs, as I recall Frederick Soddy talking about.
minus two hogs,
yeah. Yeah, where is there a concept of minus two hogs? That concept exists only in mathematics. It does not exist in physics.
That's right.
And wealth has to do with physics, because it's how many people are living and how we're feeding them and clothing them and housing them, teaching them, educating them, bringing them up, improving their lives, encouraging them to keep us improving. That's what economy is all about. Anyway, that's what Norm does. Norm learns and tries to teach about how to establish solid economic footing by paying attention to wealth and using wealth to establish the value of our money. And that's what we talk about. That's what I'll be talking about tomorrow and Saturday.
Very good.
So thanks for your tolerance and your interest.
Well, thank you. Eugene
Stack. Thank you for providing us your insights and information. We much appreciate it.
Eugene Stack.
You go ahead, Eugene.
What does this mean for Rust Belt cities in the Midwest or something like Eastern Connecticut, where there is one large defense plant and 53 small towns and a difficulty of retaining wealth within Eastern Connecticut? It gets sucked up into corporate headquarters, gets sent to Wall Street, and then is used in all these globalist bubbles and whatever.
Right.
But how does your theories apply in rural or suburban communities that are that have lost their job base,
mm-hmm.
and you know, which is also true in the Midwest? Over.
Right. Well, in the first place, what I'm talking about is not theory. I'm not talking about theories. Like I told you, from 1942 to 1952, this worked in this country. It was a policy that was adopted, and it worked. It did it. We didn't just say, well, if you do this over there, and then tweak this over here, and then put that up on top of that over there, then maybe you'll get... No. It worked. We did it. We said when you pay parity prices, which USDA calculates every month and publishes, every month they publish these prices. I can tell you where to go look it up if you want. NASS.USDA.gov. National Agricultural Statistics Service. And on their page, there's a
Howard stat.
An item called Publications. And in, under publications, one of the lists, one of the items in the list is called agricultural prices. And in that publication, which comes out every month, at least if the government is still running, you'll find a parity price chart. It goes on for 3 pages. But like I said, you only have to pay attention about the first 3 or 4 different items on there. And what it does is it lists the price, it lists the current market price as a percentage of parity. And what you'll see there is that most of those numbers are down around 25 to 28. In other words, 1/4 of parity in the marketplace is what farmers are being paid. Here's a number.
Yeah, Randy.
Explain what you mean by turnover.
Pass from hand to hand.
Mm-hmm.
One person hiring another to get something else done. How many times does money change hands before it circulates back into the treasury? That's what I call a multiplier.
I just wanted to add that what you're talking about is the base of the economy, basically. And so to address what Eugene's question was, he was talking about, you know, the burnt out industrial centers and stuff like that. Yep. Of course, they weren't burnt out when parity pricing was in place.
That's right. Most of those places built new schools, new government buildings, all kinds of buildings back then. If you look at them today, their cornerstones say built in 1952, 1950.
Mm-hmm.
1949. And then you say, why was that? Because they had the money, they had earned it. They didn't borrow it. They earned it. And they spent it on something that the community needed. So,
Yeah, 80% of the raw materials for manufacturing come from farming, is that right?
About 70% of the annual new raw material wealth that's produced comes right off our farms. Yep. Yeah, that's why ag... Well, any miner, think of it, any miner that goes down into the mine, if he didn't eat breakfast, how much work are you going to get out of him?
Right.
If he didn't take his lunch pail down with him, how much work are you going to get out of him this afternoon?
Yeah.
You know, it feeds us all. And yes, it may be bad food like it is today. We may have GMO crap coming out our noses, killing us. but it's putting it in our bellies. You know, one of the things that the Bolsheviks could not do in 1917 Russia was figure out how to put food on a plate. They didn't know. They took over the government, and they didn't know how to do that.
Well, they killed all the farmers that knew how.
Oh.
And the farmers got so mad afterwards that they killed off all their livestock to get them back, to cut off their nose to spite their face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it has to do with wealth. It is wealth that makes the difference. You can eat your money all you want to, and you'll never get fat. But if you eat wealth, you know, wealth rots and rusts and decays. And capital rots and rusts and decays. And in fact, Karl Marx himself was trying to point out that it is the human labor aspect of capital that gives origin to price. Dumb. He wasn't a dumb guy. You know, he focused too much on one aspect of it rather than finding out how it goes around and circulates. And he was also angry, so, you know, there's a lot of that. A lot of angst, trying to encourage people to rise up and, yeah, beat those guys that need to be beaten. You know, everybody needs a good beating, right? No, not everybody needs a good beating. It's like Christ said, you know, you go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. He was referring to Hosea. Read it. It's in there. Hosea, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. That's what the Lord tells us to do. What does the Lord require? The Lord requires three things. He says, do justice. You know, practice loving kindness and love one another. I mean, that's it. You do those things. That's what he said. Do these. He gave us the instruction. He told us, he was telling us. And he says, you know, you're going to see this stuff coming to pass and, you know, pay attention because I told you it was going to be happening. Pay attention now. Remember, you know, you can get there. It's all right. You know, there's going to be a lot of folks pointing fingers and making big signs and stuff and getting all agitated. Well, we aren't there yet. We aren't at the end yet. So keep your patience about you. You know, keep your wits about you. You know, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you.
Yeah.
If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, you know, but make allowance for their doubting, too.
Yeah.
If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating. Mm-hmm. And yet don't look too good or talk too wise. It's Rudyard Kipling.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thank you for your words.
Right.
That's my observations and what Norm has been about for 83 years. We've been analyzing this and still compiling the numbers and keeping track of how badly off base we've been and trying to share what we need to do with as many people as we can talk to. And it's been a lonely existence for quite a long time. So thank you for the opportunity to listen, for me to give you a heads up and share this stuff with you.
Good.
Thanks, Randy.
www.normeconomics.org.
Okay. Maybe I'll come down and get some blueberries.
All right.
Yes, please do. Try me on the 4th of July. On the 4th of July, I'll either be picking them or I'll know when we're going to.
Okay. What is the name of, you have a name?
Yeah,
for where
Randy Cook.
I will hook you up email wise.
Randy Cook Blueberry Farm. Yep.
Okay.
In Charlotte.
Okay, I'll find it.
And I don't use pesticides or herbicides or anything. I use neem oil. I use peroxide, hydrogen peroxide. And I use some acids. Compost tea acids.
Your blueberries are available by the 4th of July?
Usually, yes, usually.
Okay.
Like I say, I'll know when we're going to pick or I'll be picking, so.
Okay.
Call me around the 4th.
Okay.
Thanks.